Lost my heart and hope to die. If I ever, ever told a lie, feelings and guilty just said, choose a bad place when you're dead. Washington, he never lied.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
The full and correct title is Sir Weirdington Esquire.
Yes.
Esquire.
Oh, man. Hi, we're back again, folks. I have, I woke up this morning and super didn't want to do this fucking chapter. Gotta get myself motivated, gotta get ready, for this one, but I suppose, Weird, you should tell us what we learned last week.
Our hero, Blackjack, was soaring through the celestial void, finally among the orbs, in their purest form, she came upon the mother orb. And all was well. But then, she was drawn back into the material world and found herself revived as a sushi-cut-sized sliver of horse meat stapled to an android. So Blackjack the taxidermy horse has to get accustomed to her new robot limbs. And all her friends are there. And all the real friends are that, like, the heroes of the original fanfic of Fallout Equestria were also there to congratulate the protagonist of our fanfic of a fanfic on how much edgier and more realistic she is, and ask her if they'll come to their birthday parties, but she wouldn't because she's too cool for them. Yeah. And then my original superhero, my original character, Mega Guy, made out with Superman, and Superman, wasn't as good as making out. And he said, "Boy, Ultra Guy, you are sure much better at making out than I am." And Ultra Guy said, "Yeah, that's damn right I am.
Here's
some kryptonite pills, Superman." And Superman said, "Oh, gosh, well, I shouldn't. Well, do it, bitch." And then he did.
I hope you folks are ready for even
so much better.
I hope you folks are ready for even more infantilizing childish wish fulfillment bullshit in this chapter, by the way.
And then because Blackjack is so cool and quirky, she gets loaded on whiskey, and even though she's completely wasted, she convinces, like, one of the arch-villains of the setting to, like, give her and her friends an Uber ride on the backs of mystic, overwhelmingly powerful, basically angel horses. Horse angels.
Horse angels.
And they fly into the sky with Blackjack somehow managing to, like, stitch together a bunch of whiskey bottles into a crown.
Yes.
And it's the end of our story.
Yeah, basically. That was the whole chapter. It's so bad. Oh, man, I hate this, like, weird, horrible DLC, like, we're having a weird short adventure in Ten Pony Tower bullshit. It's so fucking, oh, man. This is the kind of stuff I expect of a normal fanfiction, so, like, this is making me retch so much.
Yeah, like, a three views, like, fanfic.net, like, hole in the ground somewhere. written by a, like, junior high student. And read by, like, two of their three friends. And even that kid usually has put together a better structure. So yeah, so before we started recording, me and Fire were mentioning that, like, it feels like we've been away for a month. It feels like we haven't done this in a while. And that's because, like, this is so much an apotheosis, so much a distillation I don't know what could it's super beyond me what could happen from here. Like, I think I've been able to predict things with alarming clarity, including horrific horse hands.
Yep. now we've just gone real off the rails.
That aren't quite as bad looking as I was kind of expecting them when I looked at the fan art. Mostly because none of them are doing it right. Like, because, like, they don't take into account that horse legs have two joints. Like, anyway.
Yeah.
It's the incompetence. It's either the incompetence or just the raw fucking anthropomorphization. in a lot of these, like, it doesn't look so bad because they depict Blackjack as straight up a cyborg furry.
Yeah. Cyborg furry horse.
Yeah, just full anthro, like, basically. Well,
not even necessarily an anthro, like, just a lot of the time it's like, it's just trying to articulate from, like, the weird, cheesy Flash style and not going for, like, realistic human hand on the end of a hoof.
So, yeah, alright, what greets us when we open chapter 2, book 3?
Before we do that, though, I get to do my final for the most part, I think we got a couple of quest perks, the final perk readout for the rest of the story, because after this point, the main character has hit max level, and we never have to talk about the level abstractions ever again. So we get two perks. One of them is Cyber Pony, which gives her a bunch of, like, dumb video game-ness cybernetic shit, and she also hits adamantine bone lacing, so she has, like, Shadowrun-style adamantine bones. She has metal bones.
Wait a minute, does this imply that, like, henceforth, because she's reached level cap, she can't get any more cybernetics?
I didn't say that.
Okay.
I just said she's max level.
I'm just trying to grok, like, anyway.
So I think, before we start, I would just like to ruminate a little bit to a degree, that I think that largely, after the first two books, this story might as well be a completely other setting for the most part. Like, it still has vestigial elements of the original setting in it, obviously, because it's still ponies with guns shooting other ponies with guns. But so much shit happens that is just basically not even really, like, not even willing to play in the space that the setting already previously provided, and just making shit up. And there's also, like, I've talked about this before, a massive tonal shift after this point. It becomes way more anime after this point, because the main character's a fucking cyborg. Like, she has robo-limbs and, like, laser eyes and fucking Terminator-like murder readout. Like, it's so goofy.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the thing that I forgot from last episode. Yeah, no, thanks to her cyber eyes, everything our hero sees from now on is recontextualized as a target of violence.
Yes.
She is reminded at all times stochastically of the harm she could do to every living thing in her line of sight.
Mm-hmm. Which in a better story would say something.
Yeah. Would have some sort of impact, would be part of some sort of larger theme.
So
would begin our protagonist's descent into sort of a dangerous sociopathy. But no, it's just a thing to keep in mind for the future, to make fun of when it is ignored.
Yes.
By the author.
Okay, I guess I should actually get into this fucking chapter instead of putting it off. Okay, I'm also disappointed because I've ran out of note paper on my first notebook. Now, folks, so we have moved into another notebook, and we're still, like, not even halfway through this fucking thing.
Thematically appropriate, given what's been said so far about the wild wild divergence from...
Okay, anyways, I guess we should move on. Chapter 35, Learning. I have a lot of pages for this chapter that nothing happens in. Okay, Blackjack wakes up super hungover. So apparently that's something that can happen to her. She's woken up specifically by Scotch Tape, who was, like, bribed by Glory with the promise of Sparkle Cola. Wake up BJ with loud yelling because, you know, sitcom.
So...
Mm-hmm.
I want to linger for a second on Sparkle Cola.
Oh, yeah, I guess I never brought up Sparkle Cola before.
Which is a like, analog for Fallout's Nuka-Cola, presumably.
Yes.
And now I have to take a note of that because I want to steal it from my own shit. The notion of radiation, nuclear energy, the XP for that, the proxy being Sparkle.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just imagining somebody in a containment suit, like, looking down at a reader and going, oh, God. Sparkle levels through the roof. We're all gonna die in here.
I think in the actual, like, story, it's a rads, obviously, because it's a Fallout thing. But, Sparkle Cola, also spark batteries are what batteries are. Because everything is arcane sciences, arcanotech stuff. Christ.
Sparkle levels are unthinkable. Don't go in there.
BJ meets up with the crew. God. Oh man, I forgot about this plot line. So she meets up with a character named Lifebloom, who's another character from the original story. He's a relatively minor character who's only importance is because Ten Pony Tower is ran by a secretive shadow government of that city called the Twilight Society, whose whole thing is they're trying to, like, follow in Twilight Sparkle's footsteps by, like, trying to, like, collect all the, like, knowledge of the past and try to use it for good, in air quotes. They're debatably good people. The big plot point here is, since we talked about before, the fact that BJ is now been revealed to be the descendant of Twilight Sparkle, the Twilight Society is now, like, concerned. Like, it's a split in their organization that she exists, because some of them feel that she's either, like, a pretender, or she's, like, an actual, like, she should be, like, integrated into the society in some way. Because of her fucking bloodline, a phrase I'm tripping over because I'm so disgusted by it as a plot point.
Collected as a sample. she belongs in a museum. I'm still a person. Still, you belong in a museum.
But the thing they're gonna do now is they're gonna basically purity test Twilight Sparkle, the Twilight Sparkle blood in her, to see if she's a direct descendant, because something I talked about maybe chapters and chapters ago is the concept that there's this, because the government was so paranoid about the technology in the setting, a lot of the setting's technology is genetic locked by a thing called a bypass spell. It's the whole thing that, like, why the Maltese EXE works for BJ and no one else. But all of them have the, like, genetic lock, and the most important ones are connected to the Ministmares directly. And additionally, the problem with that is that the genetic spells are wonky, and, like, people who are close enough relatives can make them work. She should be able to access a bunch of things that even the Twilight Society has never been able to access in their own tower, because Ten Pony Tower was, like, Twilight Sparkle's, like, library during the war. It's complicated. It's a lot of stuff that happens in FOE that I guess is ramming into this at high speed.
Oh, fuck. This makes the fucking Maltese EXE even more pointless. I thought the whole point of it was that, like, it is the, like, Rosetta skeleton key that it needs genetic authorization, rather than it being just one of many things that need genetic authorization.
It's hella stupid, because it is the skeleton key, but it's in a world where like everything is already locked the same way anyways. So anyone that could theoretically unlock it, but like it's a specific detail that like the all the OIA stuff, like all the Golden Blood stuff is specifically super locked because it can only be accessed by royal sanction because it was locked by Luna herself. So those things can't be unlocked by anyone with the right genetic markers. It has to be someone with specifically the Maltese.exe, like specifically the EC1101 is the only way that can use. It is a MacGuffin to end all MacGuffins. It is a key for certain kinds of locks that no one else can access.
So three things real quick, kind of a tangent. It becomes progressively more of a tangent as it go on, but I only have like three things I want to look. So first off, how pure could anybody possibly be? and like, what are they hoping for in terms of purity? Because it could only be one of two things, as terms of like direct descendant, either like she is very old and all of her parents like produced her late in life, so that there's as few generations a gap as possible. Two, are they hoping for incest? And along those lines, like, how is it? Yeah, how would it be that like genetic descendants from Twilight Sparkle wasn't a thing nigh universal to Vault 99? Unless of course, like this poker line of horses, this card name lineage, was tutors, like what was European aristocracy level.
Oh, all inbreeding with each other.
Yeah. And also only producing one child per generation.
Well, no, that's true. That part's true. 99, you can only have one kid. That was a thing that was established. You can only have one child.
Okay.
And they're your direct inheritor.
So yeah, incest wasn't even possible. So like, yeah, I guess it inevitable dilution happens along those lines. Third. This is the most tangential, and it's something that, like, it really, so Legend of the Five Rings is this incredibly, wanky, before there were weebs, there was L5R, RPG, that had a really interesting notion at the beginning of its run that was eventually forgotten, because later writers were cowards and fools, which was that, it had this interesting mechanic of when you create a character, you choose a family name from a samurai lineage, and that family name gives you bonuses. But the thing that made it really crazy and interesting is that the strong implication, due to like some of the other like lineages that exist in the game, is that it's not your genetic tie to that figure. It is literally having that name.
Yeah.
that if that name is officially recognized on your birth certificate.
I think something to, like, I guess nip in the butt a bit about this stuff is that, like, I don't think it matters whether or not the genetics make any sense in a story like this, because that's not the part that's really a big problem with it. It's the issue that it's bloodline essentialism is the actual issue. Like, it's not... Blackjack is not good at things because she tries hard. She's good because she's innately special based off of what her bloodline is. And she keeps insisting that she's not, like, so, like, to go back to it, she keeps constantly insisting to Lifebloom and the rest of her crew that she's nothing special. Anyone could do this. But that's categorically false. That is literally false. Blackjack is the specialist pony who has ever existed. And she is entirely wrong. And having your main character constantly complain that they're not special when that's observably false is an effort to try and make her seem more relatable. Like, it's a desperate effort to make her seem more relatable.
Well, I bring it up. I was reminded of L5R because my brain played a weird joke on me, or at least told me a weird joke of, like, the word direct descendant keeps coming up. And I'm super amused by, like, the idea of, like, what if it doesn't have to be a direct descendant? What is an indirect descendant? Well, I am the sister-in-law of the brother-in-law of the stepchild of the adopted aunt of the legendary figure.
Well, that's the case what it is with Little Pip. Like, Little Pip is tangentially related to Applejack. But, like, so is everybody else in Stable 90. So, or not Stable 90, Stable 2. I don't know why I said Stable 90. That doesn't make any sense. But, yeah, so, like, that's not really so much, like, a bloodline thing as it is just, like, the whole stable like that because of, like, the small breeding pool. And then they even make a point about it in fucking FOE that, like, the breeding pool is so small that they actually have to leave the stable soon because they're starting to breed themselves out of existence. But, like, whatever. Bloodline determinism is totally super awesome, yeah, guys.
It's very dumb, and that's why I desperately want to see a fantasy story wherein, like, no, it's you have to be familial, like, there has to be a direct familial lineage, but it doesn't have to be genetically direct. Like, so long as you are part of the heritage of this person.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, being connected by a series of in-laws is sufficient for the magic to recognize you.
All right, we gotta move on. Yeah, no, I agree. But we're kind of spinning on this point.
Yeah, sorry. It's
it's cool.
Massive diversion.
It's
a whole lot of nothing to go through.
There is a lot of nothing.
Non-events.
But we gotta get
for
through
us
it.
To check off the list. Yeah,
that's the problem though. We have to get through this in sequential order. It doesn't make any sense.
You promise it'll make sense if we do go through step by step. All right. I'm listening. I'm all ears.
All right.
You have my attention.
Leave me alone. Leave me alone. I'm doing my best. BJ also insists that she's not like a hero in any way, which is also wrong. There is this really like definite tone of like. Everyone thinks she's super cool because she does all these heroic things, and she always brings up all the consequences of all those actions she's taken. Most of them are stupid. Like, most of them at the time were considered to be, like, necessary evils. So this is a weird double back to go on. But this is just because the author hates the main character and wants her to suffer every time she does anything. Nothing is right. They get her to do the what they call the door test, which is there's a door in the inner sanctum of the Twilight Society that only Twilight Sparkle herself directly or her direct family could like open. And there's like a lot of big buildup over it. And then when she goes to try the door, it doesn't work, which would make you think, oh, maybe they're just wrong about this. And then like, I don't know when this happens, but chapters later, and I'm not going to remember to bring this up again. We just find out that like 21 rigged the door so that it couldn't open.
The fuck?
So you have to come with me on this. Wait to come in this train of thought.
I'm trying. I'm holding the ticket in hand.
Somber wrote himself into a corner by making this whole Twilight Society bullshit and also doing this in Tenpenny Tower because he knows logically. I'm going to use big scare quotes for this. There'd be no way that this Twilight Society would let Blackjack go on her way, being directly related to Twilight Spark. Blackjack still has to do her own dumb fucking quest in the Hoof, which means that there now needs to be this incredibly elaborate and insane plan for why she definitely totally is the descendant, but she's still off the hook for having any culpability or responsibility to the Twilight Society. So the way they do that is creating this elaborate
Twilight
mystery.
Breaks the lock to Twilight's porn room?
I guess.
The closet where Twilight kept her porn. Is now forever inaccessible.
How will we go on? But I'm just to nip it in the bud. This is kind of also set up to leave you in somewhat of doubt if this is actually true or not. But as I've said, this story is not complicated. Anytime someone says something that they think is a theory, it is always true. There is no people are not wrong in this story basically ever. So this is a completely pointless detail.
It's also the most aggravating soap opera bullshit.
Yes.
Of, like, the big tease and then a lie. Like, how... Oh, my brain! How would fucking 21 get access to the special ritual door?
So the worst part about this is I can always walk through the logistics of it, because this is how Sombra's brain works. He tries to account for all of these kind of stupid questions. Homage let him in, because Homage was also in on the gag. Homage is, it, also, she's come back full force in the story, and I have to, reintroduce her. She's the voice of DJ.
You certainly do.
She's DJ, I just realized this, she's the voice of DJ Pwn 3, DJ Human. She's the like, a really, really, really fast thing. The Tenpenny Tower has a, like, immortal DJ who sounds like DJ Wolfman kind of character. And his whole thing is that it's a family line thing that has been passed down from generation to generation, and it's a modified microphone.
To all you young kids out there, Wolfman Jack sounds about like this.
Yeah, exactly.
We got some top 20s for you out there, kiddos.
But Homage is the most recent person to take up the role from the previous one. But she's also part of the Twilight Society, because she's like tangentially related to someone that was important to in the government as well. This takes a lot of stuff to explain from FOE, but anyways, she was in on the plan.
She also has fast travel. You better believe it, Jack. Gonna be back out in the Wasteland Tower in no time from this plot cul-de-sac. Way out in another story.
But she was in on the plan with 21 because they didn't want to tie Blackjack down. So that's this whole elaborate plan just to justify how she can be both Twilight Sparkle's child distantly, but also free of any of the responsibilities that would imply in the setting.
And also, as the master of unlocking, 21 is perfectly capable of manipulating this, like, pre-bomb super lock.
Yes, somehow. Don't worry about it. Less think of it, the harder, like, the better off you'll be.
Just cruise through it like a... And, like a bad dream.
And I'm torn on this characterization of Homage, because it's technically accurate, but I still don't like it. Homage gets on BJ's case for, like, lying to herself by saying that she's not important or special or, like, deserves life at all. And talks up all these cool things that she's done. And BJ keeps trying to, like, catastrophize and countermand everything that she says by reminding her that she's also done a bunch of evil, fucked up shit. And this would be aggravating, but this is the one character in the entirety of FOE that this is believable about, because...
Baby, you are so great for my ratings! Don't you even worry about no atrocities!
Well, it's not that. It's that, like, Homage has a hero worship problem. She is super naive and treats people in really harsh binaries of either you're a good person who does good things, or you're a bad person who does bad things, and that's it. Like, there's a whole plot point about it where she, like, thinks little Pip has done evil and, like, gone to the dark side, and, like, is broken up about it because of that. It is actually, like, the proper characterization of this character for fucking once. It's the only part of this fucking dumb, shitty fanfiction interaction that I feel is justified. It's Fi's one good thing about the chapter corner. Blink and you'll miss it. Oh man, I hate this. Then Homage needles BJ about kissing little Pip. Because it's also revealed that Homage and Lil Pip are in a relationship, which is also a thing from FOE. God, this is the most childish bullshit. But Glory is also there, and, like, for Homage and Glory to get back at Blackjack for smooching Lil Pip, they kiss right in front of her, because, you know, lesbians is da hot. And it's just, it's so fucking childish and...
I'm very confused here, because I was under the impression... Is Homage an adult?
Yeah, Homage is an adult. She's just, like...
Has a baby brain.
Yes. She lives in a tower. Like, she is literally an ivory tower idealist. Like, that's her character. She's unpractical, which is
Okay.
So, like I said, it's the one good character. It's the only thing that Sombra doesn't fuck up in this whole exchange. That's why I'm focusing on it really hard.
Nothing is done with her having, like, an agoraphobic freakout from, like, not being in, like...
Well, they're in the tower.
Native space. Oh, this is the tower that she broadcasts from.
Yeah, they're all in the tower. They have been for the entirety of this chapter and the previous chapter, for the most part.
No. I was just confused that, like, this is indeed DJ Human's broadcasting tower. I thought that was somewhere else.
No, that's this. Yeah, it's details that, like, I don't know to bring up because this is not going to matter again after these two chapters, but, like, is a plot points from FOE stuff, you know? So it's hard to, like, figure out what to fill in the gaps with. But yeah, anyways, incredibly childish lesbian makeouts for no reason happen. Also, a lot of fucking banging in the background.
No, there isn't. That's fine. No, everything's fine. Don't pay attention to...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is...
Yeah.
Look, some people take to kidnapping and in less than helpful ways. We just have to re-educate them, don't we? Don't worry. They'll be fine. It's fine.
BJ reads a bunch of fucking letters from Celestia and Luna, the like leaders of the state in the pre-war, to Twilight Sparkle. All of Celestia's ones are basically like bleeding heart. I like war is hell. I hate watching my own nation crumble. And all of Luna's is basically like stalwart xenophobia, which is a weird spin, but okay. Oh man, I don't want to have this conversation right now. But then, because they're basically like wandering around through like a bunch of Twilight Sparkle's old shit, which is what the top of the tower is. BJ gets some alone time, and so that means time to yell at Skeleton Horse for a while, I guess. So Skeleton Horse reappears, and this almost goes somewhere where BJ and Skeleton Horse are debating the like nature of war. Like they talk about the idea of like BJ brings up the idea that they were trying to save Equestria. And Skeleton Horse says, well, but it also blew up the world. Like the consequences of the actions are far outweigh the, like, the effort. Like, trying doesn't really matter. Which would be a great point. But then it turns into this generic great man of history bullshit where Skeleton Horse insists that if even one of the ministry mayors had stepped down and resignated from their position of power, then the whole government would have crumbled, and then we wouldn't be in the situation. Which is... Yeah, that noise.
Okay.
For the uninitiated, that's not how fucking governments work. Like, at all. You dumb idiot.
There's no reason to be surprised by this. This is...
No, of course not. This is
capitalist, like, neoliberal reasoning 101. Like, that, like... Oh, no, the Soul Harvester is fundamentally a fine organism. Like, a fine device. We just need to, like, replace the brake pads and get the correct conductor operating the Soul Harvester. Like, the problem with the Soul Harvester these days is we just have a bad, immoral person, at the till. Like, no appreciation for, like, the self-perpetuation of systems that the incredibly authoritarian, presumption that nobody below the great leader, like, has any meaningful impact when, like, who the fuck is there to do the thing. You have like hundreds of people who have to make hundreds of decisions that will never like reach the great leader's ears. And moreover, like every time the great leader like says to do a thing, like there's like a half dozen people on down the chain who have to like consent to thinking that's a good idea to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was it Orwell who wrote the story about the man shooting an elephant. Anyway, one of the great writers in history wrote a short about presumably his time as a enforcer of the British regime in India, who found themselves in a position where they got a report that an elephant was on a rampage. As the colonial government, as the representative of the colonial government, he had to go down there with his rifle, and when he arrived, like, the elephant was, the situation was in hand. So the elephant was calm, everything was fine, but a huge crowd of people had gathered around to see the British colonial soldier kill this elephant. And based on all the cruelties done onto them, like, if this dude just spared the random violence, there'd be a riot. Like, if the narrator of the story spares this elephant, spares this man his livelihood, basically, does not randomly kill this elephant, he will die. He will be torn apart by the crowd. And the entire story is an anecdote to demonstrate how tyrants are prisoners of their own regime. Like, at a certain point, like, you have to embody the mask. Like, you have to, like at a certain, past a certain threshold of random cruelty, if you don't keep it up, you'll be destroyed. Because the system, the systemic momentum, like, institutional momentum.
Yeah, I would still make the point, fuck that guy, though, still. Like.
Yeah, well, naturally, yeah. But,
But I mean, I see
he's
your
the tyrant in the situation. Like, it's about tyrants, and he was, like, tyranny, and he was a tyrant. And so, like, the idea that, like, their immediate lieutenants wouldn't just carry on in, like, that everyone was a prisoner of, like, these six people's whim, and that they would never, like, think to do any of these things on their own. They, like, nobody in their respective ministries had any ideas of their own, contributed anything to the culture of their administrations. Like,
also one other point. This is admittedly a shitty point, but it makes sense in the context of the story. This was also a defensive war, not an aggressive war. It's shitty for why it's in a defensive war. Removing your leaders doesn't stop a defensive war from happening. Like, that's...
Yeah, the siege goes on.
Yeah, like, you dumbass! Like, you stupid idiot! Like, this is the worst! The worst reasoning! Fuck. Anyways, we got...
And even more than that, like, yeah, no, if they're in a defensive position, their response is purely reactive. What the fuck are you talking about?
It's just fucking bullshit. It's just it's equivocating the idea that wars are always two equal fronts of two equal aggressors fighting each other equally, which has never been a real war ever.
Oh shit! This is a flashback to the whole, like, negotiating for peace arc. Like, why are you going to the besieged party to ask them to end the war? They have no say in it anymore.
They are defensive warring. We should probably mosey though a little bit.
Yeah, no, let's talk about more things that don't matter and don't come up again. Like, okay.
Yeah.
We've got a broken door that leads to nowhere.
Fucking Bone Daddy insists that BJ get some therapy, but BJ just says, like, no, more or less. The story would be over and I need to do the story.
That mood. That feel, yeah. When your skeleton horse tells you you should probably talk to a professional.
And you're like, no. No, you.
Oh, dude, I think you really might need help. Don't talk to me that way, hallucinate. Spectral skeleton that makes fun of me over all of my insecurities.
All right, BJ spends...
Don't sass me, Great Gazoob!
All right, BJ spends the rest of the day chilling with the crew, hanging out and lapping the luxury of Ten Pony Tower, because it's a super ritzy place in the waste.
How much longer are they going to be tolerated in the super riches?
Not much longer.
It's not like they have anything better to do. It's not like they've ever had anything better to do. Correct me. I'm not sure it was stated specifically or exactly, but is the war still happening between the?
No, the war is over.
Okay.
The war is over, and we're in newer, weirder territory after this.
So before you tell me when they finally get their tab and skedaddle, do we have any idea what the crew wants to do right now? What's the reason to do anything? To still be hanging out together? Like, do they have an objective? Do they have ambitions, wants?
Just like, mostly just following Blackjack till she croaks and.
What does Blackjack want right now? What is their motivation?
Her motivation is to, like, solve the mystery of the magic fucking evil program and recoup. Like, right now she's just recuperating from, like, extended robot leg attachment surgery. So, like, the main quest is still on. They're just, like, hanging out in this story for a while.
But as I joked at the beginning of this story, I don't. It's actually, like, she's lost so much meat, it's weird that, like, recuperation time is
a relevant factor. Well, she has, and she hasn't. Like, she still has a lot of physical meat left. Like, she has her entire midsection, except for all her organs.
And bones!
bones don't matter!
There's a horse hide draped over... over a Terminator unit, and that
bones aren't real. No, I gotta nip this in the bud. She is not nearly as cybered as you think she is, because that's coming later.
Fuck.
There is
she has
more,
a nebulous amount of.
She is not Robert Cop yet. She has become a Robert Cop sooner than you'd think.
Okay, right. So parting it up, and then. And then what?
They bump into, like, a trader who's claiming that they're from the Hoof, and they're, like, extolling all the great trade, and it's just like an endless gold mine, and everyone's got to come there, and BJ gets pretty pissed about this person, because she immediately reeks of being, like fake, basically, because she doesn't have the whiff of the, like, Hoof trauma on her, like Blackjack does. So she presses her for info until the traitor, like, panics and reveals that she was, like, paid by someone to, like, go out and, like, tell the waste to come to the Hoof, because it's, like, an endless place of riches. And apparently there's a bunch of other traitors and prospectors and such that have all been told the same thing, and they're paid really wealthy to do so. Everyone gets real nervous about what Blackjack's gonna do to this horse, and then the horse just explodes! Like, she just blows up in the middle of a court, like a fucking food court.
A recurring theme. Protagonist is presented with an actual moral dilemma, where they're, like, to, like, an opportunity to, like, almost certainly do something, like, truly hideous or redemptive. But, nope, choice ripped out of their hands. Nature contorts to destroy this person for them.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep.
What next?
And then BJ spends some time in a prison cell before they get it all sussed out that she's not actually dangerous. BJ.
What? Did they give her a cyber horn that allows her a new channel to, like, fire cyber bullets? Like, how could she possibly?
Sorry, what? You're gonna have to back up on, like, that.
So her horn was, like,
oh, it's reattached.
Castrated.
It's reattached.
But it was, wasn't it, like, shaved up and mutilated? Like, as
they glued it back on. Like, it was some super glue.
I'm going home.
You can't.
Taking.
You can't.
Oh, shit. No. Oh, fuck. Within.
You don't have legs.
Within the diegesis of the podcast, I'm a jukebox. I can't. Fuck, I forgot I'm a captive audience. Ah.
You can't go.
How would I fail to notice that? Being a jukebox within the scope of our fiction.
Oh! Oh, man. Okay. They find a box with a ring in it that is basically exactly the same material as the, like, evil ring they found in that sporting goods store that, like, exudes enervation. Which leads into the stupidest idiot ball moment I've ever seen in this fucking story, where BJ's like, hey, I found a ring that a bunch of, like, that looks exactly like the ring I found before that exudes at innervation when you hook it to electricity. And everyone's like, nah, that's dumb. You're stupid. You're an idiot, Blackjack. That can't be right. That's fake. You're wrong. That isn't real. Enervation's just magic bullshit. No one knows what it comes from. Even though in the chapter in which that happens, Glory exclaims that this might be what causes the source of it. So this is a massive, like, misremembering of details. But this is just so that, like, we can't actually investigate what enervation is until much later into the story, when it's even stupider what it actually is.
I hate this.
Yeah, I hate it too. I hate every time a supposedly intelligent character has to be the dumbest person on the earth because story. It's a huge problem with bad writers.
Story is a strong word for what's happening.
I mean, it's written down, like, you could read it. It's a book.
Plot. I would say, for the sake of plot. I am now coming to the, like, my third eye is opening. My brain is expanding to the size of a galaxy. And I say to you now, you can have a plot without a story.
Galaxy jukebox memes. Alright, we gotta mosey. I'm getting...
No story is being told here. This is just details. This is events strung together. But a story, like, stories have, like...
things in them that occur.
A purpose, a meaning, characters.
Alright, I'm gonna try
objectives.
I'm gonna try and move on a little bit quicker with the story from here on out. The plot, not the story. BJ has a chat with Lacuna about they're also going to tackle Project Chimera, so, like, the plan is also now to fight Sanguine on, like, directly and steal the technology that he wants access to. Lacuna admits that the goddess knows about the Gardens of Equestria, which is why there's this big massive plot hole that doesn't really exist, but Sombra needed to include it. I talk about this in a bunch of other episodes before. Go listen to that episode again, I guess. It's needless nitpicking of plot holes that don't really exist. BJ and crew go to a dinner party hosted by Homage for some reason. BJ ruminates on the whole, like, Golden Blood and OIA and trying to find out more information about that. BJ meets a robotic owl that can talk. And
it also explodes.
No, it doesn't explode. It exposits.
Worse.
It's much worse. She's. It's basically a talking terminal. It. She can, like, question it for information, and as long as it's not been redacted information, she can, like, regurgitate it. This is when we find out that Golden Blood was a former teacher, who was, like, a cool guy, and, like, we just get a bunch of, like, stuff about his, like, life that makes him seem like a more honorable, upstanding young man in his youth.
Sure.
Did you know Hitler was a painter? And he loved dogs? And he loved to handshake with little children.
He did not love dogs. Like,
I know.
A lot of his teenage years.
Those are all lies.
A thing called a dog whip.
Yeah.
To whip dogs and people. To just whip things that moved in his...
Yeah.
But he was a painter, and not an especially great one. Notably, like, people have, like, made some hay about the fact that he was really bad at drawing people.
He's also really shit at doing buildings. Even on my notes it says fucking zebra tribes. Because we get a bunch about Golden Maid's backstory. Golden Maid, he's Golden Blood, but he's... Basically, in his youth, he was the son of, like, a fucking explorer, and he had all sorts of basically pop fiction 1920s explorer adventures.
No. I'm gonna make a prediction. Let me see. Let's play a game. His father. He was taken on an expedition. His father died midway, but he was adopted by a tribe of zebras and eventually made the adoptive son of a chieftain. But one of the chieftain's son, the would-be inheritor, became deeply jealous of him,
and
so turned evil, killed the entire tribe. But in the aftermath, that led Golden Blood to be able to return to civilization with zebra magic, far more potent than a normal zebra.
So I wish it was that complicated. This is way more in the canon of pulp fiction 1920s style stuff. Because he doesn't
I've just given you the breakdown of the standard template
of the White Savior. Yeah, I know. But the thing I was gonna say is that this doesn't even have that. It has so much contempt for the zebra people. He doesn't even bother to integrate. But he does learn he becomes fluent in zebra and learns all their ways, but doesn't integrate into the zebra people.
Great. Oh wow. Great. Okay.
Yeah, it's way more like Alan Quartermain kind of shit.
I forget the name. More Crusoe.
Yeah.
He adopts one of the tribes people as his man Friday.
Yes.
Great. Okay, more Crusoe, less Tarzan,
not integrating into the tribe, just learning from them. None of this matters, and literally never, zebras are never going to matter in any significant way, because none of the main characters are zebras. There will be zebra characters in the story, but they'll never be anything besides antagonists, or victims, or shitty parables. The only thing that fucking matters, even though Sombra goes into exhaustive detail about the zebra tribes, the only one that matters is the Starkatterii, which only matter because they worship the stars as gods, rather than the rest of the zebra tribes, who fear them as monsters. And that's the only real difference between the two of them. They're fucking racist. It's so Lovecraft levels of racist. Like the zebra are the scary natives that worship dark god shit. And even then, this is the double dark god worship shit. They're fucking zebra Innsmouth. It's so fucking bad. Oh, I hate fucking Lovecraft so much. Because no one ever, people just so tacitly love the fucking racist bullshit that's baked into the stories. Oh, I fucking hate this shit. I hate everything to do with the zebras in the story, because it's all... Because it was vague in the original story, he just does everything in his power to write as much about them as possible, but they just don't matter. It's all lore, and, racist as fuck lore at that.
Need to find a catchier name for it, because, my, the lore guffin.
Lore guffin.
It's Hitchcock defined a MacGuffin as the thing in the story that the spies care about that the audience doesn't, or fundamentally can't. And this is this kind of lore wankery is entirely surely somebody in the setting cares about this, but we the audience have no reason to.
Yeah. It really starts to genuinely piss me off the more I deep dive into it on a second reading, because it's all meant to matter too. You're meant to know all this stuff.
You weren't kidding about nothing fucking happening in this chapter.
Oh, fucking nothing.
Okay, so after we talk to the owl tells us a whole shitload of things that will never matter.
Yeah, then we get into more shit. Little Pit regurgitates the plot, the plan from FOE, which is unnecessary. It's brain dead. It has nothing to do with anything. It's just literally so Blackjack can comment on the plan and also absolve Little Pip of her drug use during the scene, even though she was the one that enabled her to do it in the first place. The only.
And then Ultra Guy waved his hand and used his decrypton of kryptonitification beam, and Superman was like, "Oh dang, I wish I could do that. Fucking, you're so cool, Ultra Guy."
Oh, I'm dying too. I just remembered because, like, since this is the first scene that Glory and Calamity are in that they actually talk to each other, this could have been a great opportunity to, like, disassemble Glory's bullshit. But because Sombra's a lib, as I've been apparently been explained to you by somebody, fucking this scene sucks so much. So Glory and Calamity have wildly conflicting political views. Glory is a, like, slow reform liberal, while Calamity is basically an anarcho horse of some flavor, because they argue about the concept of, like, slow reform is not going to fix anything, especially because it's literally what caused the fascism. Like, Calamity doesn't quite say it that way because, like, since this is being written from Sombra's perspective, all of his responses are super limp-dicked and, like, and have no weight or bite to them, because we're meant to kind of agree with Glory's sort of, like, liberal interpretation of politics. And I fucking hate this scene. Like, I cannot stand how ugly this, like, version of Calamity is, just for the sake of, like, pushing this really shitty version of liberalism onto this character. And his arguments are so shallow, because they're not meant to be agreed, like, you're not meant to, like, even think about them. They're meant to be defeated. Oh, God.
I wish I had something other than Europe.
I'm filled with so much bile over this sequence. It's like, oh, I got my sock puppets are talking to each other, and my one sock puppet is shaped like a character I like, and the sock puppet is shaped like another character I don't like, and now they're yelling at each other, and oh, the one I like is winning. Like, it's such...
The one who keeps making excuses for Nazis?
Yeah.
The one who, like... To this day, doesn't fully disavow the Nazi order is the one who is, you know, intuitive, like, innately correct. I mean, like, no, I was about to say, to be fair, I was about to give Sombra charity, but, like, here's the closest thing I'll give. You could present this horse kills fascists Calamity as proposing weak argument by way of, like, listening and nodding to a solid 5 minutes of fucking Glory running at the mouth, and then picking up the punch bowl and dumping it on her and walking out of the room. Like,
yeah. Yeah. But the like, fucking, like, leftist own fantasy. There's
the real leftist own fantasy, not the fucking weak ass, like, unreal fucking West Wing horse shit.
Yeah.
The fantasy that we can take praxis on. Fantasy that is true to life and is actionable. Just like when you listen to a fucking lib Nazi apologist running on about, like, well, yes, I was part of designing Project War Crime, and, like, in the here and now, like, my, you know, The homeland is killing thousands and thousands of people in the worst possible ways. But we don't need any, like, sudden violent action to stop all this. Like, just some minor tweaking. The way we conduct ourselves is enough. Yeah, you just listen to that horseshit and, like, pick up the mashed potatoes and serve them.
God, I... God, there's a point in my notes I just, like, don't remember. At some point during this, because I just, like, didn't bother to include it, at some point, Blackjack and Glory fuck during this whole chapter, and I can't remember where it happens, because it comes up at the end of this chapter, and it's the only reason.
It's there on the dinner table, like, immediately after.
Well, like...
To like...
It's coming up now, because, like, Blackjack and Homage are talking about their relationships to their respective other lesbians. And it's fucking awkward and cringy and super, like, it's one of those boy howdy can you tell a straight man wrote this scene kind of moments where everyone's being weird and flirty, but in that, like, really pornographic way, and, like, BJ is, like, trying to get all four of the lesbian horses in the scene in on a foursome, and it's just, like, really uncomfortable and creepy and weird and horrible. Like, I felt, like, genuinely uncomfortable being in this scene, and it just, like, it skews me out so bad. but we're almost done this chapter, and we're almost there. We're getting there. Despite nothing happening, we had a lot to say. There's a kind of fun joke in context that kind of made me laugh. BJ is talking about how, like, wanted to kill me ain't nothing. Because Little Pip is questioning, because Little Pip doesn't like Alicorns for obvious reasons. They're kind of dangerous. And questions if Lacuna is really safe. And BJ is like, well, if the criteria of wanting to kill me was a problem, then I wouldn't have any friends. It's like, all my friends have tried to kill me, and then she kind of, like, motions to the room, and Scotch is like, I haven't tried to kill you, and he's like, oh, I guess Scotch hasn't tried to kill you, which kind of made me laugh as, like, a contextual joke, because it's said fairly nonchalantly. Yes.
Yeah.
It's
a pretty good gag. It also, like, leaves on the table, like, you think Lacuna is the biggest problem here? Like,
yeah.
What about the fucking baby killer? Yeah, hi, I do kill babies a lot. Oh. Yeah.
You won't believe
as the baby killer at the table, I am frankly offended that you would turn to big small anime over here as the biggest threat in the room. Did I mention that I was like on the sort of board of directors of Murder Inc? That like I'm one of the big four of the like sort of genocidal like Huns, like the murder gang patrols the hoof, like
yeah.
I've been at this for like nearly a millennia of terror and ruin, like.
And you think the I'm Lolita?
Famous.
And you think the girl in the Lolita fashion? She's the dangerous one. But this is really just an end so that they can like question Lacuna, and we get to learn a bunch. Like we get to learn the like. The actual full truth of Lacuna's state, because they talk about the goddess, and so I guess Blackjack just knows this and has just decided to explain to the audience correctly, because like Sombra never does a good job of explaining exactly what's going on with Lacuna. So Lacuna, her namesake comes from the word for when there's not a word for something, which anyone that Googles can do that. And it's plural because it implies that it's a bunch of things that are missing. Lacuna is not a person. She is a hole where a person should be. Like, she's essentially a body that is devoid of a mind. And then the goddess scooped out all of her negative feelings and emotions from all of the collective hive of hundreds and hundreds of alicorns and mushed it into a big ball of depression. And then fucking dunked that into Lacuna, because the like nightmare of being a giant cacophony of meat and madness and horror alicorns is not something most people can grok very well. So like the goddess is just excising those feelings from both themselves and all of the rest of the consciousness, so they can operate better as a more like righteous entity. And it's
so none of this is reflected in the text up to this point. Like none of this is foreshadowed by anything we have seen from any.
Well, like
characters.
We get like we go on like a mind voyage in Lacuna's head, and we see a bunch of like negative memories the goddess has. Sure. But like that's the only explanation we're ever given.
But she doesn't act on it. Like this is what I'm saying is that like none of the characterization like if like every alicorn was a deeply unsettling Stepford with like no capacity for regret who like wander through the world like smiling and like performing casual atrocities because they don't know what it is to regret. And meanwhile Lacuna is barely functional, like can barely muster the will to speak,
and
is also endlessly lashing out.
So I'm gonna have to explain two infuriating points. First of all, that is in the original story because that is part of the thing with the goddess, is that she's suppressing all of their emotions so that they can function. That's a thing from the original FLE. The trash dumpster of depression thing isn't real, but that comes from this fic alone. Here is the infuriating part of it. This is a thing that a lot of people get super wrong about mental illness and depression. The implication is that since she's a trash heap of all of the negative emotions, she knows what those feels like, and that allows her to emote better to other people, and that's what makes her functional. She is the kindest horse in the world because she knows what suffering is. which is wrong. So, like, it's... That technically, like, you can... So, to a certain degree, depression, like, being sad can help you emote to other people being sad, but, like, depression isn't the same as that, and also, like, tons of humans, including myself, like, don't handle having, like, severe depression at times very well, and, like, lash out violently at other people a lot. Like, not physically in my case, but, like, I'm a horrible person. Whatever. That's not important for this conversation. But, so, like, the implication is that, like, oh, we just made her suffer, so she knows how to, like, empathize, is just, like, wrong? That's not how, like, anything works? Sorry, I cut you off really bad there. Weird.
No, just to say that, like, being in pain is a state of being that innately makes one selfish.
Yeah.
Like, it's difficult not to be at least a little self-obsessed while in the act of suffering. But in the aftermath of healing and being in a place of strength, yes, the experience of knowing what it is to suffer can certainly help, can certainly improve the clarity of one's emotional intelligence and the ability to, like, understand where someone is coming from, or like have context for somebody else's pain. But, like, no, it doesn't make any sense that, like, this implies that you can't have become a nurse and, like, be an effective, like, nurse or teacher without first having a limb crushed under, like, and, like, particularly, like, if, yeah, just the main problem with this idea is that Lacuna would thereby have to be in the act of supreme suffering, which would mean that they would have a limited number of spoons.
Yes. So
to put up with anybody's anything.
So an incredibly weak response that I can already see people drumming up for this in their brains is the, like, a reading in this could be to interpret that this is all the things the goddess who considers himself a divine being taking all of their weakness, which includes emotions like empathy, and putting it into this horse. But that is not how this is framed. This is framed as sad makes you feel more emotive. Like, that's how it's... Like, there is a point where Blackjack literally fucking says that in the fucking story. Like, she says she's the kindest horse because she suffered the most.
What?
Like...
Okay! Okay! Not to brag, but I am the most humble person I know, personally. Oh, no, deeply, deeply self-obsessed people can be very easily in a state of, like, deep depression. Like, no, it's Hitler, other very famous, United States presidents, lots of, like, yeah, the Zodiac Killer, like, no, you can be a deeply hurting, wounded person without, like, having any conception that other people exist.
Yeah.
Let alone deserve respect and mercy and consideration.
There's a line from this very podcast that Weird says really early on, which is, like, there's, like, essentially two responses to pain, which is either I have felt this and I want no one to ever go through this again, or I have felt this and I don't see what you're complaining about. Like... like,
oh yeah, no, and no one else should have to, no one else should get to be spared.
Yeah. You either become you either respond to pain and become more empathetic of it, or you become more selfish about it. That's a broad, wild oversimplification of both, like, psychology and philosophy, but I think it's a still kind of a good statement to kind of build, like,
I mean,
an ethos on, in my opinion.
It's a truth I've lived. It's a dichotomy of human responses that I've had to, like, experience in myself and others. I've been both of those people at various points in my life.
Yeah.
Which goes to another, like, In part, depending upon how much pain I'm in right now.
Yeah. It's spoon theory. Anyways, we still got a couple more things to discuss that I think are going to take a little bit longer than 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, and then what? Okay, so we had dinner, an owl,
Lacuna.
Explains a thing that, like, makes me real mad.
Yeah. They talk
about... And you know what? I'm still mad on Horsepool's behalf. Like, are you sure we're okay with that alicorn in the room? Horsepool, like, puts the spoon out of, like... Excuse me?
I kill babies!
Legend?
I'm a baby murderer! I killed my own
legend.
Daughter! Like, fuck you!
Hundreds of years of baby killing! For what?
Oh, man, now we get to talk about what is basically toxic masculinity as saw through a lesbian horse. BJ and Glory finally get some alone time, which I think is right around the time they fuck. BJ is talking about how she's fine, like she's not even really that banged up about being raped, which is not true. She's obviously hiding that pain, but like it's a goofy. So the scene is fucking goofy because like she's like, oh, I'm fine, like it's not even a problem, like I don't even really feel it, and I don't even really feel the loss of my limbs, and like sort of like actually thanks Glory for like saving her and not letting her die and all that shit. And Glory gets all choked up about it, and there's like a fucking like literally at a Conan the Barbarian line, which is basically like, well, you can't cry, so I'll cry for you. And it's just like fucking come on, man. It's meant to sound like a sweet scene, but it's so goofy that like oh yeah, Glory really is just her girlfriend. Like she has no other traits than like to be BJ's like emotional like stability like fucking girlfriend. Like that's all she exists for. She exists to handle all of BJ's emotional baggage, which is fucking hilarious because that's a reversal of their relationship, you know, dozens of chapters ago when, like, that was what BJ was doing for the rest of the crew.
Somehow, inexplicably.
Yeah. But yeah, like, BJ is like, yeah, like, I think that's the thing, too, is, like, BJ's really shed a lot of the more interesting elements of her character. Like, even, like, the shittier shit, like, she's, like, a martyr. Because it's now become like a real literal thing about her. She is now like, she is now redeemed. She is now the son of Christ, like son of Christ, the son of God. Like she has ascended. Like she has now been forgiven of her own sins, baptized in blood. And she's now like a stonier, like colder, more distant character now. But yeah. And just before we leave to go back to the main story, there's a lot of discussion about the concept that like sex is like, what's keeping Blackjack grounded, because like it's the only thing that she feels is still organic and real about her, which like equates the concept of like sexual interaction as like a kind of like metaphor for humanity. Like it's a thing you can still physically, she can still physically organically do, and it's keeping her feeling like real and human, or pony, fuck it, whatever.
And yet the town of Ass was so sinful that it generated bad vibes.
Oh yeah, totally. Well, it's because it's monogamous sex between two loving partners and not casual sex.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. I think it's frustrating because, again, it's this problem that, like, it's the cyberpunk problem of, like, robotics make you less human, like, physically less human. So there's this it's creating a lot of this dichotomy of, like, okay, anything I can do that is the old me is considered innately more the real me, and that's just stop writing this fucking shit, you dumbasses. Like it's preposterous to think about, because it's like like it, you're like getting a pacemaker steals your soul. Like that's what it feels like to me. Like it's so fucking dumb. But yeah, they basically like waved goodbye to the main characters of the original story, because they're going to go off and solve the main character, like the actual main story. And
yeah, fuck it. Fuck Somber. Here's a bit of self-care. I'm rerunning the story here and now. They actually had to flee Tenpenny Tower because Horsepool was so offended by being overlooked as the most hideously dangerous thing in the room. She killed, like, three people that night. Like, she, like, wandered around the tower and just, like, brutally murdered three people.
There's just three extras that are dead now. She just redshirted a bunch of guys to establish drama. But yeah, then they just, like, initiate Lacuna's fast travel protocol, and they just, like, comically boink out of the tower back into their own story. And that's how we end the chapter. Yep.
I mean, didn't count as a dungeon instance, so, yeah.
Yeah. She can just use it as many times as she needs. Yeah, this chapter, fucking, just to, like, to give a brief review, I'm not sure if Weird has any other points, but, like, this chapter is, fucking, oh, man, I hate this. I hate this just, like, standing around and talking and not doing anything fucking chapters. Like, this happens a lot where, like, thing happens, like I've said this multiple times before, usually the chapters come in pairs. It's, like, major event happens, like, catastrophic thing occurs, violence happens, then there's a cooldown chapter where everyone has to reel from the thing that happened, and then another big thing happens. And this is kind of like the pace of everything, how everything's happened up to this point. But this was like a double chapter, like a double wide chapter of nothing. Like, I think Somber thinks that getting cybernetics is significant enough to be considered a whole chapter. But, like, that's also a thing to talk about. Like, I haven't mentioned a lot in this chapter, but, like, Blackjack's a giant robot now, right? And, like, outside of some token references, like, we're basically over that now until it becomes a big deal again. And, like, that's, like, just feels wasteful of a plot detail to be like, oh, my main character is a robot and, like, is Terminator now. That might say something about the broader story. But, like, because I just have to waffle on this fucking project for 77 chapters, like, well, I'll get back to that idea later. Like, this is deeply a story that of any fault it has, the biggest fault it has is that its editors fucking suck at their job. This fucking whole project could have been cut down to a third of its length and would have been much better for it. But it's just...
Yeah, no, I agree. Fuck you, editors on this project. You fucking clowns. Like, I have looked upon your works, and you're not even competent copy editors. What the fuck?
Yeah.
You fucking chuckle fucks. Did you graduate, like, high school? Like,
I don't know. Is there any other points that we wanted to, like, talk about before we got to the, our like ending role stuff?
Still deeply amused by sparkle as a replacement term for radiation. Oh no, this is the worst case of sparkle poisoning I've ever seen.
It just makes me think that they're like a radiator, but it's like a little glitter coming off of them.
I mean, can you imagine, like, like, mindless, like, flesh-hungering ghouls that, like, have, shit, what's the name of that, classic, Trapper Keeper designer? The extremely cute, rainbows, like, zombies emitting rainbow sparkles, from their hollow eye sockets, and... Yeah, so, I had another note. Oh, given that, like, DJ Human is, like, in the center of, like, wealth and power, is a reclusive, only knows, like, the one world of this, like, literal ivory tower of, like, elite privilege and power, the initial joke of DJ Human becomes all the more resounding, and I'm even more amused by the idea that instead of a DJ Indestructible, oh man, we've got some carnage on the highways and byways of the waste. More like, hello, listeners, we're doing another pledge drive this month. I understand that there is some cannibal gangs out on the northwest So look out for that.
Yeah, this is.
And here's some easy listening.
It's just fucking Welcome to Night Vale, but horses. It's fucking Cecil Baldwin as a horse. Fuck.
I mean, that was my initial DJ Human joke. Is like,
yeah, no, I know. It's just like
the most boring NPR voice imaginable.
God.
Oh, so like, there's a flashback of that. I did hold my tongue on a couple things so that we could just get through the non-events. And boy, oh boy, it was a long series of non-events.
I know, but
Jesus fucking Christ,
we had to get through
you weren't them. Kidding. This, I think, this was the. This has to be one of the biggest wastelands of actual content.
We say
the story's given us so far.
I say a lot the phrase "boy did a lot and nothing happened" in this podcast, our fanfic podcast. But boy, I don't think there has been less anything that has ever occurred in a story. Like
shit. I think the last thing to note, and I again, this is something I held my tongue on, but like. This fucking grifter who's, like, paid off by somebody else, like, in the middle of interrogation just before Blackjack is about to, like, do something? Before our protagonist is allowed to make a decision that would, like, define her as a character in any way, explodes! And nothing else is said about that, like, she's held in solitary for a little while they determine it probably wasn't her somehow.
They do an autopsy, and it's like... The explosion came from the inside.
Sure, that doesn't preclude a psychic.
Yeah, this is a world of magic horses. Like, who knows? But like, it's because like the story really super stops being about like anything. I've really been thinking about it. Like, it really just goes off the rails after this point and like stops being a story in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. And it. Like, it's just, I just want to do my own thing now. And it's tangentially related to the original story. Like,
and I guess good on him. I wish it started there. Actually, I wish it just hadn't.
Well, the thing is, like, I disagree, but, like, I like the horse dissonance. Like, that's my thing. I like the weirdness of this setting. But, like, I don't know.
Somebody already did that. Like, it sounds perfectly fine. Perfectly cromulent.
Yeah.
Work of secondary fiction. That, but this one, you could have just not. Somber.
You could have didn't.
I hope you find some other way to express yourself, or maybe not even do that. Like, don't. I don't know. Play more video games, Somber. Like, I don't know. I actually at this point I'm filled with resentment that Somber can get things done where I can't. Like.
You,
no, well, at this point, it actually just is.
You
is,
have standards.
Ugly jealousy, like yeah, like
you're
yeah.
You're,
no, my fault is wanting to do something good. My fault is like wanting to like.
You're not impossibly
positively to the later.
You're not world. Impossibly high on your own farts. Like you have like convictions.
Yeah, that's my mistake. Fuck. Is there anything better we could be reading or watching right now?
Ah, fuck. God, I haven't even really been doing anything besides art for the last, like, week and a half. I don't know, do you have any...
You know, paradoxically, I've been busy not doing art. Like, I've been busy, approaching doing it. Like, I would like to plug my own thing, but I don't have enough of my own thing to...
Oh!
to present you. Dark Crystal Age of Resistance, Age of Dark Crystal prequel on Netflix is very pretty.
It's very pretty.
I'm not sold on it myself, but like rave reviews are flooding in, and a lot of work went into it. It's very pretty. Godzilla King of the Monsters is a very entertaining film. Very, very a lot of giant monster movie. But you know what? Let's go into the plug section. If you hit us up on Twitter, email us. If you're curious, I can tell you why I'm convinced that Godzilla King of the Monsters is the most chuddy fucking, like, authoritarian, like, knife near fascist propaganda
that
I've
that'll
ever
be...
seen. And it broke my heart this week when it suddenly, like, hit me all at once that, wait a minute. Oh, shit.
Oh, shit, this is eco-fascism. But yeah, we gotta save that for our Godzilla podcast. Our podcast within a podcast. But, yeah, you can find me at Thou Art Phi. You can find Weirdington at Weirdington E. Was it Weirdington ESQ at gmail.com?
Weirdington ESQ, yeah. Weirdington ESQ at gmail.
I have also held my co-host at gunpoint so that he has finally opened up at least a Ko-Fi page or coffee page, depending on how you pronounce it. And we'll be accepting donations and, like, please give weird donations. Our comical Meteor X is quickly approaching and will destroy Weird. And I will be out of a co-host, and that would make me very sad.
Your total lack of feedback on Twitter and posting comments and reviews on iTunes and Podbay and other Podbay podcast sources convinces me that you're not there, and so, like, I am increasingly in despair that, like, there is no hope for me. I guess you can prove me wrong by, like, sending whatever money you can to the Ko-Fi, and more importantly, increasing our profile on various podcasting hosting sites by just throwing some stars at it, like putting.
Yeah, next week I'll probably force my co-host to actually open up that Patreon, so we'll also eventually be doing bonus episodes on fucking
bonus content, bonus art. Like
I'm definitely
create some polls for things that you guys would like to see. I've got a board game that I keep dreaming that I'm going to develop, but I'm, like, being incrementally slow on that. Like, I can start putting together some stuff for you guys to see on that. And if you like it, well, you can use our Patreon and my Ko-Fi as a way to support it coming out faster, coming out better, coming out at all.
Also, next week I'm just gonna start recommending romance fix. And no one can stop me.
Oh, God. Well, that said, I'm more convinced than ever that this was all a terrible mistake.